regulation after regulation.
I think there are outdated regulations that need to be
new
changed.
Government regulations, which were created to protect
the regulations are
$1.8 trillion.
There's a regulation that doesn't make any sense. Why do you keep
it? Is this really the best we can do?
Welcome to the Regulatory Transparency Project's fourth branch podcast series. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the Federalist Society's fourth branch podcast for the Regulatory Transparency Project. My name is Colton Grob. I'm the Deputy Director of RTP. As always, please note that all expressions of opinion are those of our guests on today's call. This afternoon, we are pleased to have a conversation exploring whether artificial intelligence systems are biased, and if so, what should we do about it? We're pleased to feature Stuart Baker, who is a partner at Steptoe & Johnson here in Washington, D.C., Kurt Levy, who is president of the Committee for Justice, and Nick Weaver, who is a researcher at the International Computer Science Institute and a lecturer at UC Berkeley. Stuart, Kurt, and Nick, how are you today? Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Colton.
Pleasure.
Thank you very much.
If you would like to learn more about each of our speakers and their work, you can visit regproject.org, where we have their full bios. In a moment, I will turn it over to Kurt to get us started. After opening remarks and discussion, we will go to audience Q&A, so please be thinking of the questions you'd like to ask our speakers. Thank you all for joining us. Kurt, the floor is yours.
Thank you. You know, this is an unusual issue for me because I come at it with two hats on. One from my previous career before law school as a scientist slash engineer at an AI startup firm, and one for my current career as an attorney in which I've done a lot of work on discrimination, ranging from Title IX to the University of Michigan affirmative action cases. And sometimes my two different parts of my brain argue with each other, but in this case, I think they both lead me to the conclusion that the much-valued problem of bias in AI is probably not going to turn out to be the threat that people think it is, that at the end of the day, AI will probably decrease discrimination. And the reason I say that, well, one reason I say that is that the alternative is more reliance on human decision-making, kind of the old-fashioned way. And people come to tasks with a lifetime of irrational prejudices. Whereas AI models start out as a blank slate without any biases. Everything they know, they learn from the data you give them, which is examples of where the correct output is known, typically thousands of examples. Just a very quick example would be a lender might build a model to try to predict when a potential borrower would default, and they would use examples of previous borrowers where you know if they defaulted. And the model's only goal is to minimize its error rate for predicting that. Short of a rogue programmer, there's just no room for irrational prejudices to slip in. Another reason that I think AI is you could say, better than humans is that it's hard to hide things like race, gender, sexual orientation from a human, whereas in an AI system, it's easy. You just don't make it an input variable. And that makes disparate treatment as opposed to disparate impact essentially impossible. Now, to be fair, there could be proxy variables. You know, the model could try to, giving them too much human-like credit here, but they could try to guess race or gender from a proxy variable, but they don't even know what race or gender is, and they lack the malevolence to look for a proxy unless that proxy has some predictive value for the model. I know one concern people voice a lot is that determining the reasons for an AI model's allegedly biased decision is more difficult than, say, if you used a regression model. And that's something that I worked on way back when I was in the AI field, was extracting explanations from machine learning models. And that was in the 90s, so I know explanation has improved. But it's still harder than a regression model. But consider that extracting accurate explanations from a human is even harder. I mean, humans rely on intuition, and they often don't know why they made a decision. And if it's a biased decision, they're very likely to try to conceal it. Now, one of the problems with throwing around the term bias with regard to AI is that the very purpose of a decision-making model is to discriminate. You know, the lending model that I mentioned, it needs to discriminate against people with bad credit histories, for example. So not all discrimination is bad. Now, again, AI models don't have irrational bias or intentional discrimination. What they do have potentially is disparate impact. But disparate impact is just another name for correlations that people object to. You know, maybe living in the inner city gives you a higher rate of defaulting. And detection of correlations and other patterns in the data is how AI learns. Same for humans. So AI only learns the correlations that prove useful in increasing the accuracy of the model. So by definition, if you sacrifice accuracy, if you prohibit, you know, certain correlations that the model wants to use but people object to. One example, let's say you have a parole model, and AI is often used in bail and parole decisions more often than in many other fields. The model might learn that males are more likely to be repeat offenders than women, and it would therefore improve its performance by taking gender or some proxy into account. Now, is that okay? I don't think there's an easy answer. I mean, if you make people more, if you make the parole model more error-prone by taking away its ability to consider those correlations, then real people will be harmed. It's often hard to know what the fair outcome is. One example I like is about probably almost a decade ago, there was a study that found that facial recognition models in China, Japan, South Korea had more trouble distinguishing between Caucasian faces than the faces of East Asians. And some people would say that's discriminating against Caucasians. Now, I don't know if that's discrimination. I mean, privacy-wise, I'd be pleased if a facial recognition model had trouble, you know, recognizing me. But let's put that aside. My point is that there's an inevitable trade-off between maximizing the overall accuracy and the accuracy on East Asian faces. That's an inevitable, unavoidable trade-off. And would you call the less accuracy on Caucasians, is that problematic bias, or is it the right result for, you know, a model that's mostly going to see East Asian faces in practice? So now, to be fair, an AI model maximizes its accuracy on the examples it's given. So disparate impact could be due to bad data. And when I say bad data, I mean data that doesn't accurately reflect the real world. If that's the problem, then the solution is improve your data. Now, that may sound easy. It's not necessarily easy. Various politicians and policy folks have called for new laws to regulate these sort of issues. And let me just conclude by saying that I don't think we need new laws. I think AI bias can be addressed and, where necessary, punished with the existing anti-discrimination laws that govern human decision makers and some of the tools they use, the non-AI tools. For example, you know, there's been plenty of litigation over hiring exams. For now, AI is just another tool, and, you know, every new tool does not require new laws. If I choose to use a hiring tool that results in discrimination, I don't know that it should matter whether it's a dumb tool or an AI tool. You know, someday we may need new laws when AI can produce human-like autonomous machines with broad intelligence, but that's decades away at best. And, well, anyway, that's probably a good place to end.
Thank you, Kurt. Nick?
Okay. So, first of all, when we talk about AI, what really is machine learning. You take a bunch of data, you label it, feed it into the system that tries to discover patterns in the data. And then, of course, you have some test data to validate it. Now, first of all, the data selection is done by people. So that alone gets you bias sneaking into the system. It's the training data itself is often a problem. But the other thing is unless you're really careful and use transparency tools, it can often be really hard to find out what was actually learned, because the result is actually a pretty dumb pattern matcher that doesn't actually have a lot of capability. It's just kind of tweaked in very interesting ways. So a classic example is you want to build an image classifier. You take it a photo, and it tells you whether it's a dog or a wolf. Classic image recognition problem. You get a bunch of pictures of dogs. You get a bunch of pictures of wolves. You train it all up, and voila, it works really good on the test data. The problem is what it really is a recognizer for is trees and snow, because the dog pictures were all taken in people's backyards, and the wolves' pictures were all taken in the wild. And that's amusing, but it can give you very interesting problems. And we see basically three classes of interesting failures that are problems. So firstly, every couple of years, somebody reinvents phrenology, that is studying bumps on the head powered by AI. You take faces and you go, is this person going to be a criminal or not? And the problem is it's very easy to screw that up on the training data, because what happens is you take mugshot photos and very mugshot similar ID photos from non-criminals, you train it up, and you get a recognizer that will tell you that people's expressions are a bit different when they're actually being set up for a mugshot. Another problem is you do get cases where you get both bias and wrong answer. So the biggest known example is the Compass sentencing tool, which is one of these tools that tries to predict whether somebody will reoffend in terms of parole decisions and the like. When ProPublica did an actual follow-up on it, they saw not only racial biases in the result, but wrong answers in the result. And this type of problem can exist in, say, predictive police tools. So one problem that machine learning can often have, it's the drunk is searching for his car keys under the light. Why under the light? Because that's where they can see. And so, for example, if you do predictive-based policing on where you want to reinforce your drug efforts in high schools, you might get the minority high school simply because you did more bus there in the past, not because the pot consumption is any different. It's just not known in the training data. But the big problem, the biggest problem, and this is a policy problem, not an AI problem, is the biased and right. Let's face it, the U.S. was founded on a racist design. If you have a problem with me saying that, I will give you 3/5 of an F. And this turns into significant economic inequality. So if I build a machine learning system to do mortgage lending, I'm going to throw in a huge amount of data. I'm going to carefully blind out the overt racial signifiers. My machine learning system, however, is going to be very good at picking up the secondary signals that highly correlate. And the result is my mortgage lending computer is going to recapitulate redlining. This would be explicitly illegal if I did it deliberately. But what is the policy implications when it's created by a tool? It's desperate impact, but it's a desperate impact based on economic reality. What if the borders are fuzzy? I can clearly say that I don't block all minority neighborhoods. These minority neighborhoods get service because these are the wealthy ones. And so the real hard policy question is not, is AI biased? But what do we do when AI bias is really just reflecting the biases present in our society? That's the hard policy problem.
Thank you, Nick. Stuart? We may have lost Stuart. Kurt, do you want to follow up on Nick's?
I,
I thought I was turning mute off, but I was turning it on. Let me start with by saying I think Nick's question is exactly the question we ought to be addressing, which is what do we do when the AI bias, as he defines it, reflects the bias in society? And I'm going to say I think what we end up doing as a practical matter is imposing quotas on all of our AI engines. And I question whether that's the right answer, but let me take a little bit of a running start at that, because I mostly agree with Kurt's analysis of the basic problem. AI is designed to find correlations and patterns, and it is not interested. It's incapable of intentional discrimination, and if you worry about that, you can always take out the denominators that tell you the machine what the gender or race or ethnicity of the target population is, and then it will just strive to match as closely as possible the training data that and the answers that is given as correct in the training data. If what you want is a system that kind of corresponds to Martin Luther King's hope that he would be judged by the content of his character, not the color of his skin, you've got that with AI. It is looking only at non-racial or non-gender modifiers to arrive at its conclusion. And it just wants to be more and more accurate. That said, I think it is inevitably going to produce disparate impacts because many of those factors, as we know, as just a practical matter, vary substantially in the United States based on race and gender. Income varies, occupation varies, education varies, and so a host of things are going to end up with a disparate impact. If what you're looking for somebody for is somebody who won't default on their mortgage, you're not going to produce a perfectly representative picture of America. You are going to recapitulate redlining in some fashion. And so that raises the question, well, what do you do about that? I do think that in academia, the default assumption is that all of those differences are the result of some original sin of institutional racism in the United States. And that's a very comfortable narrative, at least among academics and big chunks of America. And the assumption also is that if you produce a result like that as a decision maker, there's a good chance you're engaged in unlawful discrimination, and you damn well better explain yourself. Anybody who produced those results would be viewed as a racist or a sexist or what have you, that presumption carries over to the machine. It's a kind of anthropomorphism in which you first treat the machine like a human being and then view him as a bad human being. It's sort of misanthropomorphism. That is part of the public narrative that we're already getting about AI, that time and time again it turns out that it is biased. The best statement of that is not to blame all of society's ills on institutional racism, but at least to say, well, I think that the human beings who provided the patterns about what is a correct answer and an incorrect answer, the ones who said this will be an arrest and or this will be a warning, were themselves influenced by bias and therefore were training the AI to recapitulate their bias. That's a not an implausible argument, but it raises the question that Nick left us with, which is, what are you going to do about it? And here's what computer scientists seem to be doing about it. They are saying, well, if the problem is a disparate impact, I have to fix the disparate impact. I have to go in and impose something that looks almost exactly like quotas on my machine to get it to produce the numbers that will not lead to people calling my machine a racist. There are, you know, remarkably ham-handed, from a social policy viewpoint, mathematical models being designed pretty much to do exactly that, to say, why don't we go in and take each of the protected populations that we have in mind that we're being criticized for not having fully represented, and we'll judge them separately on these categories, and then we'll pick among them the ones who score best in income or education and the like, and then we'll select our results so that the correct answer is one that produces not just accurate results, but accurate results that meet the expectations of perfectly proportionate representation. I'm not sure there is a better way to solve this this problem, but it is a problem that we have not been willing to recognize as a problem when it is imposed by social action. We all recognize that there are differences among genders and ethnic groups in education and income, and we have never said, well, then we have to equalize all of those things. But suddenly, when the same result is achieved by AI, the presumption is that it needs to be fixed. I question, I'll stop in a second, the notion that we can just use current law, because disparate impact analysis, at least in the context of employment, says if you use a tool and it has a disparate impact, then you have to show that there's a business necessity for using that tool, that it has an independent, non-discriminatory value to your company. And you could do that if you were to say, you need to have 2 years of college, or I'm only going to give this job to somebody who's current salary is within 10% of the salary I'm offering, then there would be a disparate impact, but you could explain why you did it. Unless AI explanation has gotten a whole lot better, I'm not convinced that you can show a court that your artificial intelligence has some independent factor that is producing the results that is non-discriminatory. And so I suspect that, in fact, people who could engage in hiring based on a whole host of relatively neutral terms and not be held liable would be held liable if those same neutral terms of decision were incorporated into an artificial intelligence engine. And so my worry about this is, at the end of the day, we're going to find that what we are doing, or what AI engineers are doing, is smuggling a whole set of quota decisions into an artificial intelligence engine whose operations will never be fully understood by the people who are acted upon by it. And so that we will be resolving the great debate over quotas, which has not yet been resolved in favor of quotas by virtue of the coding. And that's my principal concern about how this AI bias debate will turn out. And my last point, the Washington bill that has just been passed, that is a regulation of AI face recognition, calls this out expressly. It says, Is there an impact, a disparate impact on protected subpopulations? And if so, how are you going to fix it? If you haven't got an answer to that, we're not buying your product. Well, that strikes me as basically saying, go in and use one of these quota shims to solve the problem, and then we might buy your product. I'll stop there.
Actually, on that on that particular example, it's more that is showing the problem with the training data. So why are face recognition systems in Asia better on Asian faces? Why are U.S. face recognition systems much worse on African-American faces? A lot of it is training data, that how do you train up the data?
I completely agree. I think there are two solutions, and sometimes the solution is just more data and better data. But that's not always going to be the case. Your redlining example is not really going to be solved with better or more data.
And let me emphasize that, you know, again, it's not about whether AI has any bias in it. It's about whether AI will do better than humans, because that's the alternative. And all these biases we're talking about are found in humans. Humans tend to mix up people that they don't have a lot of experience with. You know, how many times have you heard someone say Asians look alike, or Jews look alike, or African Americans look alike? You know, that may just be that they don't have as much experience, and an AI system will do the same. And as Nick said, you know, yes, AI will reflect some of the biases in our society, but not all of them, because those biases have to sneak their way in through the data, rather than being, you know, entrenched in our minds like they are for most of us. And AI will get rid of the irrational ones, the ones that don't make the system have overall higher accuracy. And remember, there's always that trade-off. If we get rid of a disparate impact, again, which is a bad, you know, just another name for a correlation we don't like, the accuracy will go down because the model only used that correlation because it improved accuracy, and that can hurt real people. You know, with parole decisions, maybe you have someone in your neighborhood who really shouldn't be out of jail because, you know, we tried to make the parole AI system, you know, more politically correct.
So I agree
with
all
that. But at the same time...
Go ahead, Nick.
At the same time, that specific example, the problem is not only do the systems often express bias, but they can be biased and wrong. And one of the biggest problems with AI is the explainability. So what is the bias creeping in? Why? And so for that example, it probably crept in with bias in the training data. Want to train a computer
on which
to
you
be
and
racist,
Kurt
AI is great.
More than I. Kurt, you were confident that explainability is not as big a problem as that Nick and I think it is. Why?
Well, again, because I did, and this was a lot of my work, you know, I wound up patenting a method for adding explainability to neural networks, and I thought it did a pretty good job 25 years ago, and I know that there have been improvements, and again, it's never going to be as easy as regression models. If anyone out there has built regression models, knows that, you know, there you basically just read off how much of the variance in the decision making is explained by you know, X, Y, and Z input variables. But it'll never be that easy. But again, I compare it to humans. Humans are notoriously bad for knowing why they made decisions. You know, there's a whole book about that, Blink. And by Malcolm Gladwell, and also humans tend to lie when they have bias. I mean, the machine learning model doesn't know that it should try to hide bias. If you did put in a variable, you know, such as gender or some proxy, it will be honest and say, you know, I based this on height, for example, just to pick a, you know, some proxy for gender. It won't try to hide that. I think one of the reasons, I think it was Stewart who said that we recognize there are differences in race and gender, but, you know, they make us uncomfortable and people sort of pretend that they're not going on. Maybe one reason we don't like, you know, these differences in AI is because they are so, you know, naked. You know, no one, the AI system doesn't know to be politically correct, and that makes us uncomfortable.
I agree with you on that. It is, but because it doesn't know how to soft pedal some of its results. It's going to force us into decisions and force us to confront some of these issues, unless our reluctance to deal with it leads to all of the solutions being buried in the code, which is my fear, is that the people who are selling the products and who want them bought are going to be told in coded language, you need to produce results that don't have a disparate impact. We're not asking how you did it. In fact, we're not even going to look. Just don't produce those results. And they'll just achieve the results, and the folks who have been on the receiving end of what amounts to discrimination will never know it happened because it'll all be in the code.
Well, here's an idea. Why not, and this would be a legal thing, why not require the training data to be reviewable? That it's not that you hide it in the code. It's you hide it in the training data, whatever biases exist, either deliberate or inadvertent. And so why shouldn't somebody who thinks they were suffering from a desperate impact based on some AI-based decision-making have the same rights to understand the training data that they do with the credit report? So if your credit report gives you a negative decision, you have a legal right to get a copy of the credit report. But if it's your credit report being applied with some AI model, can you get the training data?
It's interesting. You could bury the quotas in the training data too. You could say, I need to produce this result, so I should drop out data where people in certain neighborhoods have defaulted to avoid redlining.
And by the way, that was one of the reasons that my company and I developed the explanation ability, because one of the things that early things that AI models were used for was borrower evaluation or credit scoring, as we called it. And there was a legal requirement that you give the top three reasons for, I forget whether it was for denying the loan or for the credit score, but in any case, you needed an explanation. We gave the explanation. So you don't necessarily need, we certainly didn't give them the training data. They wouldn't know what to do with it. So there you had an explanation. Do you want to give people the training data? I mean, you have to be an expert to be able to evaluate the training data. I've heard other people say that the weights should be transparent, and the weights are basically the equivalent of the connections between neurons in your brain. That's really hard to do anything with the weights. I'm all for transparency, but you have to sort of think about at what level do you want transparency, such that the person affected by a bad loan decision or a bad parole decision can make sense of what you're giving them.
Yeah, and the likelihood that that will happen is small in the absence of litigation. No individual is going to be able to do that. You'd have to have somebody who made it their business to go looking at that, and then they'd have to be able to say, I think this training data has been subtly skewed and doesn't represent the reality. And then you have to go find other data you think is more representative and compare it to the training data, right?
Yeah, and again, it's normally not going to be skewed in the malevolent sense. It's going to be that that the simple, perhaps sad fact is that people in certain neighborhoods are less likely to pay back their loans. And again, that's an uncomfortable reality that, even if there's no malevolence behind it, there's going to be a desire to sort of, repress those results.
Well, let me ask you about the what worries me on the law side. It's not so much disparate impact, although that's a problem. It's more the increasing movement to kind of say, whatever your product is, it has to be fair, or it has to be fair to vulnerable populations or protected groups. All of that turns out, to my mind,
pushes people in the direction, the developers of these products, in the direction of inserting these quota shims into their product, and yet legislators confronted with language saying, make sure you're fair to protected groups, would never think that that's what they were adopting.
I mean, I think you're right. There is a tendency. I mean, but people have said the same thing about, you know, disparate impact law that, you know, including Scalia, but many others as well, that, you know, disparate impact law at the end of the day is, you know, often does require quotas. And let's also remember, though, that, you know, we're talking as if it's, when we say protected groups, under the law, it's not protected groups, it's protected classes. So if it's illegal to discriminate against, you know, women, it's also illegal to discriminate against men. That may not always be true in practice, but certainly true in the doctrine. And what about, you know, that system that I mentioned that, you know, discriminates against men because men are more likely to be repeat offenders? I don't know that to be true. I suspect that that probably is. You know, I think a lot of people would say the system should be able to take that into account. And you could also make a case that, you know, if we eliminate that correlation, then could women sue and say, you know, you've now biased the system to have worse predictions for women because you wanted to make it fairer, and that's discrimination. So, you know, it's very hard to know what's fair. It's easy to use the word fairness, but very hard to know what's fair.
Yeah, and in fact, one of the things that I've noticed is the kind of moving goalpost notions that come into discussions of AI bias. There was a pretty famous debunking that where they used the word rampant racism of a healthcare system. It wasn't really AI; it was more scoring. But it ended. It was. It turned out that it sent to intensive care, that is to say, highly managed care, people who had a lot of medical problems and who were costing or were going to cost the insurance company and the hospital a lot of money. And the analysis showed that it sent more white people than African Americans who were equally sick to managed care. And the spin put on the study was, here's an algorithm that is discriminating against black people by refusing to give them the same level of high-intensity care that it gives to white people because, well, we don't know why. And then it turned out that actually the system was remarkably effective and completely unbiased at identifying people who were going to cost a lot of money to treat. And the people who were going to cost a lot of money to treat got heavy management for, one suspects, reasons that had less to do with saving them than and more to do with saving money. And so it was perfectly unbiased if you believed that the reason for the application of AI was to save money, and utterly biased if you believed that the purpose of the application of the AI was to provide better care to equally sick patients. That kind of thing, I think, we also saw, actually, I think in the software that predicted bail and release for people, because it actually was unbiased on certain measures. So the question of, are you very likely, you know, what's the probability that you're going to be turned down for early release? It had been balanced by the company to produce equal results for all ethnic groups. But if you applied a different measure of bias, it was possible to see bias. I think the alternative measure was something like, what's the likelihood you will be wrongly released? And There were racial discrepancies. You can't, as you say, get perfectly smooth distributions of benefits if you've got more than one benefit or more than one goal in your built into your system.
Now, of course, that system you're describing, the one thing it won't do is the type of irrational bias that a human might have. A human might just say, I don't like black people, and so I'm going to give them less medical care. That will not happen. But, you know, I think at very least there you have both a moral obligation and it makes economic sense to understand why your model is behaving the way it is. And, you know, why is it having on average different recommendations for black people than say white people? And you can look at the data, you can look at some of the explanatory tools that I was talking about. Now, once you understand why, and there will be some rational reason why, then you're facing the hard trade-offs about do I want to eliminate this disparate impact, but at the cost of the overall accuracy of the system? And like I say, there's no easy answers.
All right. Thank you, Nick, Stuart, and Kurt. Let's now go to audience questions. I'm going to turn it back to our panelists to continue the conversation while we wait for our first question.
Sure. I mean, I mentioned, you know, that there have been in the last few years more proposals to legislate all this. So, you know, I mean, there's plenty, even without legislation, there's plenty of pressure coming from the media, from civil rights groups, and even from, you know, the big tech companies themselves. You know, they certainly seem very concerned with questions of AI and bias. So, you know, let me ask the other two panelists, you know, what they think they would like to see in terms of policy or whether it be voluntary policy or legislation.
I think we need to be able to tell the difference between biased but reflecting something in society versus biased and wrong. And one of the real issues is it's really hard to know the difference. And so we see this in the Compass sentencing tool. We don't know why it's not only having disparate impact, but wrong impact. And it's really hard in these systems to know why they're screwing up.
How do we know if they're wrong?
ProPublica did a significant follow-up. So what the problem is so many AI systems, you don't do a follow-up on the real-world data, not just your training test data, to verify that what is happening in the real world is predicted by your model. And so that's what ProPublica did, is they did a follow-up in Florida on hundreds of the cases and compared the predicted scores with what the reality was. And not only was there a significant disparate impact, but it was basically under-predicting re-offense from white criminals or over-predicting on the African-American community. So there was never a good explanation on why that was happening. But it's really hard to tell the cases unless you actually do this follow-up.
So let me propose then two possible relatively narrow remedies for concern about bias. Instead of talking in terms of protected classes or subpopulations and the like, it's not at all unreasonable to say if you are concerned about bias in the AI, one possible remedy is to say, you need more training data, and you should
And there's nothing wrong with providing additional data that will make the model more accurate. That's easy. And then I think it's fair enough to say one kind of more data and more accurate data that you need to have is you need to fold back into your model the actual answers that are achieved from the real-world consequences of applying AI to them. That's just a matter of saying, yes, you ought to continue to add data and refine your model. Both of those things are likely to improve accuracy. They might or might not reduce impact by gender or race or ethnicity, but if we're following the kind of content of your character versus the color of your skin model, it's also reducing discrimination. But that's not what we're getting. Instead, we're being told, well, you've just got to avoid unfairness.
Yeah, now, let me say something about wrong answers. I mean, obviously, if we're talking about wrong answers in individual cases, that's unavoidable. I mean, the system will try to maximize its accuracy, but it'll still get some individual cases wrong. If you mean wrong answers, as in it's not being as accurate as it can, that's at least theoretically impossible when it comes to the training and testing data. Well, it's certainly true with regard to the training data, and if you do what people often do and just take one data set and divide it up into testing and training data, then it's almost impossible to not maximize accuracy on the testing data. But as Nick, sort of alluded to, there's a problem with just using the same data for training and testing, which is that it doesn't necessarily tell you how it works in the real world. So one could say, well, then we need to test not on data so similar to the training data, but on real-world data. But that's hard. Real-world data is hard to gather, often very dirty in the sense of having missing or incorrect fields, and often not representative. So, again, there's no easy answers, and, more data is not necessarily the answer. If you're just talking about, more data that's like the original training and testing data, if you didn't have enough examples to begin with, that could help. If you already have a huge number of examples, more is probably not going to help. It's a matter of diminishing returns. But, I guess my concern would be you add data to get the result you want. So if your system is discriminating against males in determining parole, you just throw in many examples of males who turned out not to be repeat offenders, and there you're just putting your thumb on the scale, and I don't think that's the right answer.
All right. Thank you. We are now going to go to our first question.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you so much for the opportunity to ask this question. Thank you so much to all of you for just sharing some more insights. I'm Marissa Adonis. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of MTA Visions. We're a DC-based corporate social responsibility and government relations firm. The core question I had was centering around the legislative solutions in which you guys see that how we can go about fixing some of the inequalities, it seems, in this diversity in AI through legislative vehicles, but you guys sort of kind of answered that. So my follow-up question would be, how do we or can we even create, because I foresee that the protective classes are going to remain as a standard. So how do we or can we create a protected class of some sort for diversity of thought, specifically for conservative thought?
So this is an interesting question because, in fact, because of COVID-19, Facebook and Twitter and YouTube are all using AI engines that, if they were trained on the behavior of the human beings in Silicon Valley who made decisions before this, are almost certainly engaged in discrimination against conservative thought. It's ironic that conservatives have almost exactly the same objections to AI that the racial and
ethnic minorities are likely to have a suspicion that the whole thing is rigged, and they'll never quite get to the bottom of how it was rigged. That said, boy, I think that it would be, you know, if you followed my somewhat cynical approach, then you'd have quotas for left and right thinking, you'd make sure that you suppressed as much left-wing thought as right-wing thought. I can't believe we're going to end up there. So maybe, since Kurt thinks these decisions are explainable, I should pass this question to him.
Well, you are right that to the extent that AI is used in online content moderation, they are trained on what Silicon Valley folks think. I mean, that's where they get the quote correct answer from that they're trying to get the system to learn. And that just points out another problem, which is that that's a whole other area of bias. The examples we were talking about were at least the known outputs are factual. There's not much opportunity for bias in getting the output wrong. I mean, we know if somebody was a repeat offender or not. We know if someone defaulted on their loan. Now we're talking about a whole other type of bias, which is that the determination of the training targets, i.e. the correct answer that the system's supposed to learn from, is itself subject to bias. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, if we're talking about what should be taken down as hate speech or, you know, what's otherwise offensive, that's extremely subjective. And the idea that AI is going to work in a bias-free way in that sort of environment, that's it's impossible.
And
I guess
the problem
one thing
is
I should add, though, is again, the alternative is humans, and humans will have at least as much bias.
But you bring up the hypothesis that things like criminal reoffense and stuff like that, that the training data doesn't have the same problems. But it often does, and it's really hard to know whether those problems have come up.
Oh, by the way, I meant, and I probably wasn't clear enough, I think we probably agree on this. I meant that for a given example, you can accurately or almost entirely accurately know whether the person reoffended or defaulted on their loan. But you're right. Bias can come in not by getting the training target wrong, but simply your selection of examples. So for every example, you have the training target right, but you purposely picked, you know, examples where, you know, minority groups reoffend and whites don't, for example.
Or inadvertently. That's the problem, the bias of the AI system, when it happens, reflects the bias of the implementer unconsciously, that when you select your training data, that selection process has your biases in it, and you don't necessarily even realize it.
Yeah, again, I would you know, make the argument that there are methods for, you know, much like a pollster has methods for trying to have representative data, there are methods for doing it. And again, they're probably better than just relying on you know the correlations that humans have in their mind. But I don't claim that that's imperfect. And you're certainly right that there's an opportunity there for injecting bias.
All right. Thank you, Nick, Stuart, and Kurt. We have our next question. We'll go to that now.
Good evening. My name is Tom Lillis. I'm in Rotterdam, the Netherlands. I have a question coming at it from a little different angle. It's about policymaking. Often, when the cases of AI, it's taken it's not anthropomorphized. It's taken as an oracle, and in the political arena, in the policy arena, how do you prevent that from happening? How do you prevent the AI from being the oracle, so you're actually having to prove the oracle wrong instead of the oracle having to prove its correctness?
Could you maybe give us an example?
Well, the example of the parole choices. The parole board could easily say, well, the AI told us this person is going to reoffend, so we are not granting parole.
Well, you know,
the board is then has resigned themselves. They've taken themselves out of this decision making process without taking themselves out of the decision making process.
You know, which is why I said earlier on, I think we should look to existing discrimination law where you can't just do that. I mean, if you're an employer and you're using a bias test, which is, you know, just another one of many possible bias tools, you're responsible. You can be sued as an employer, and, you know, you have to defend your use of that test that has the disparate impact. And I think AI should be used in the same way. I guess that's one of the problems with you know, sort of this, I don't know if I want to say myth, but this, you know, belief that AI is more autonomous than it is. It could lead people to, you know, think of the employer or the judge who's making or the parole board, I should say, as you know, not having responsibility. But believe me, at this point, AI is just a tool, and the person who's choosing to use that tool should be held responsible.
I do think, though, there is a problem here in the reverse situation, which is, I think, more likely to come up. You know, if you're a firefighter or a policeman trying to get a promotion, and they give you a test, and then they have two scoring systems and two passing scores depending on ethnicity, you know there's some kind of reverse discrimination affirmative action program, and if you object to it, you can sue. But if everybody is treated the same and the AI just spits out the results, you have no idea whether a quota system was built into those results or not, unless you get, you know, 10 years worth of data and that they are suspiciously similar to some particular preferred percentage, which is a little late in the process.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, one way to do it is to have the AI make it, you know, so-called neutral score that it spits out, and then you apply two different thresholds depending on race. But you're talking about the case where you got rid of the disparate impact by putting in a sense, you know, data with a different bias. And you're right, that's much harder to track down, and I suspect would be very hard to win if you challenge it through litigation.
Yeah, and watching how Harvard handles admissions, you know that hiding this is part of the strategy. It's not something that people want to admit to. They may be proud quietly that they've done it, but they are not prepared to defend it publicly.
Well, I guess I'll defend AI by saying, you know, it's not just AI where you could do that. Even if you were building, you know, a regression model, you could still bias the results by biasing the data.
So the answer is we can't really prevent a halo from forming over AI and people smuggling results into the AI back in the back room and you never realizing that it's happened. This is a serious problem, and it's probably made worse by the insistence on the proprietary nature of all the algorithms that go into the AI, so that even the people who buy it don't actually know how it works and aren't allowed to.
And, you know, I mean, you know, probably the average corporate client will say, just give me an AI system that doesn't have a disparate impact on any of the groups that will get me in trouble. And, you know, and as Stuart has pointed out, that will result in pressure to find some way to have a quota, even if it's just built into the data.
Or the opposite is true. Just give me something that can disguise my need for avoiding desperate impact, because I can say with a straight face, the computer told me to. That also exists.
Well, maybe. I don't know. I don't know what country
that's
you
what I'm worried about.
Well, if I want to discriminate against conservatives on Twitter, that would be my
You're right. That's not the form of discrimination prohibited by law, but yes, for sure they would be delighted to get that.
All right. Well, we have just approached the top of the hour. Nick, Stuart, and Kurt, do you have any final thoughts for our audience?
No, I'm
I guess my final thought is, you know, what I said before, which is just, you know, think about the alternatives. You know, think about the fact that we shouldn't be comparing AI systems to perfect human beings. We should be comparing them to the very flawed decision makers that humans are.
So my suggestion, I agree with that, is we cannot accept AI as the answer to many of these problems, and we cannot allow feel-good words to be adopted into law that are going to have a profound social impact that we may not discover for many years. And finally, when you read stories about academic studies or journalist investigations that demonstrate that AI is biased, just remember, nobody publishes stories that say AI isn't biased. It's boring. So they went looking for a way to say AI was biased. And if you look hard at the study, you may discover that they rigged the system against the AI that they were examining.
I think it's always important to remember that AI is a tool that reflects the training data, and the training data reflects society. And we should always at least keep that in mind and be explicit about what we are doing. And the other thing is if an AI system is biased against you, it's biased. If an AI system is biased for you, it's reflecting the real world of society.
All right. Thank you, Nick, Stuart, and Kurt. We're very grateful for your time today. We welcome listener feedback by email at rtp@regproject.org. Thank you all for joining us. This concludes today's call.
On behalf of the Federalist Society's Regulatory Transparency Project, thanks for tuning in to the Fourth Branch Podcast. To catch every new episode when it's released, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spreaker. For the latest from RTP, please visit our website at regproject.org. That's regproject.org.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.